Good morning and welcome to Focus on Health, the weekly radio program where we talk about all the great things happening at Van Deest Medical Center. I am your host, Lori Foster, and joining us for today's program is Jade Williams. I do want to share, I think many of our listeners are aware that we have had cases of measles in the state of Iowa. I want to share what Iowans should know about measles. Initial symptoms, which may occur 7 to 21 days post-exposure, would include high fever, possibly cough, red eyes, runny nose, small bluish spots surrounded by kind of a red background that might occur on the inside of the cheek. The rash is 3 to 5 days after fever onset. You could see a red blotchy rash that begins on the face at the hairline and progresses downward and outward towards the hands and feet. Think about if you've traveled. Have you traveled anywhere in the last 21 days where measles cases have been reported? Have you been in contact with someone who has measles? So the best way to prevent measles is to get vaccinated. And if you're wondering if you have been vaccinated, it's the MMR vaccination. And if you think that you may have measles, we do encourage people to call their healthcare provider and tell them the symptoms that you're having. Also, you should not be in a waiting room. You would want to get a mask so that you would not expose other people. We encourage people to stay home until they do have a chance to see their healthcare provider. If you have questions, again, you can contact your primary care provider or contact Hamilton County Public Health. And I do want to invite people to come down and see us tomorrow night. We're going to be at Webster City Market Nights. We are a stage sponsor, and the music will be provided by the Schoen Brothers. And I've heard great things about them. Looks to be a gorgeous night. We'll have a booth down there. We'll have some giveaways. Please stop down and see us. Webster City Market Nights going on from 5:30 to 7:30 downtown Webster City. And lastly, I want to mention I've shared this program on the last couple of weeks. It's called Better Choices, Better Health. And this is a chronic disease self-management program. It is a free, interactive 6-week workshop that will have weekly sessions that are held for 2.5 hours. Each workshop is led by 2 certified program instructors, and it really is designed to help people gain confidence, learn skills to better manage chronic disease, stay active, and take charge of their lives. So they'll be learning about healthy eating and exercise tips, how to evaluate treatment options, how to create action plans, and should be a terrific workshop. It is going to be Thursdays beginning July 10th and run through August 14th. This group will meet in the mornings from 9:30 a.m. until 12 o'clock noon. The meetings will be held in the hospital conference room at Van Deest Medical Center. There will be healthy snacks provided. There is a limited number of participants per program. And this isn't just a one-time deal. There will be future workshops offered. If you have questions or would like to get registered for this free program, contact Amy McCullough, who is a registered nurse, also health coach, and our diabetic educator. Her phone number is 515-832-7730. And with that, summertime is here, and it is the perfect time for self-improvement. And we know sometimes people need some inspiration, some motivation. Joining us for this topic today is adult primary care nurse practitioner Jade Williams. Good morning, Jade.
Good morning.
Thanks for being on the show today. I think this is going to be a terrific topic to talk about. The weather is nice, perfect time for people to get outdoors. They maybe just need a little bit of help. So take us through this journey.
I was just kind of reflecting on what would be some good options to discuss for today's show. And I really think delving down the path of discussion on how to just kind of improve ourselves. That seemed to have been our theme so far this mm-hmm. year. It's kicking it off with healthy habits at the beginning of the year. And so realistically, you know, we're all on some type of a path, whether and trying to kind of identify what are some of those tools and options that are available or out there for us. So, you know, just getting started, thinking about different options such as lifestyle modifications. And this could be something as simple as doing it on your own or even under the direction of a coach, like a health coach or a trainer, or also, you know, an option for you to come in to be seen in the clinic and have this type of discussion as well. Sometimes we just need a little extra assistance in these types of things and developing goals. So realistically, the easiest one is really those dietary changes and considering a calorie reduction. And I know this can seem daunting and difficult at times because you kind of have to do a little bit of identification, but if you don't necessarily have a smart device like a Apple Watch or a Fitbit or something like that, you can always go back to like a tried and true and just think about the typical recommendation of 2,000 calories a day and then make adjustments from there. And so if you were looking at doing something more rudimentary, such as a calorie reduction, you could take that 2,000 calorie, and if you were identifying of trying to lose some weight, essentially, that's usually why you would do this, you could reduce you could take that as a baseline, the 2,000 calories, and try and reducing it by, say, 150 to 200 just to start off, and then see how that kind of goes for you over the next week or two, and then make reductions from there as well. But the biggest thing to think about is no matter what we do, we always have to think about calories in, calories out. It's very basic, and there's a lot more science that goes into that, but thinking about calories in versus calories out. So if you reduce your calorie consumption to, say, 1,800 a day, then you would need to be making sure you're expending more than 1,800 calories. And you can also figure out what your like basal rate essentially would be for burning. But on average, like a female such as like myself, my size, 5'9", more on like a leaner side, I burn like 1,400 at rest. So that would just be me doing nothing necessarily, mm-hmm. just living on the couch and consuming and not really moving. So I would have to increase, you know, my activity level and then also reduce my calories to try and put myself into a deficit. But if that's something, you know, you're interested in, there's all sorts of calculators and different tips and tricks on the internet that could help you even just get started with that. And then if you thought about, okay, well, I've tried the calorie reduction, but now I'm a little more interested in what makes up those calories, you could consider something like those macros or something. You've probably heard about that, maybe even on the news or a different type of program, but macros is really just the overarching protein, fats, and carbohydrates, which make up your calorie consumption. And so really with those, you want to think about whole foods and kind of dismissing any ultra processed. You know, there's actually 15 different diets that any patient could be on at any time. And that's including things such as like your Mediterranean diet, high protein, high fat. You know, there's so many different examples. So you really need to figure out what would work best for you and your lifestyle. And then also kind of hone in if that's something that you're working with, thinking about as you go through those adjustments or kind of the trial and error, what are the things that your body is craving? So if you notice that you tend to have a more higher carbohydrate diet and you're trying to reduce your carbs, you might notice that you are desiring those more frequently and it might become a little difficult. So you also want to be a little more, give yourself a little extra grace sometimes and allow for yourself to be able to make adjustments, but also know too that it's normal, especially if you've had a high carbohydrate diet. or processed foods, essentially, those are going to be the things once you start to take them away that mm-hmm. become a little more difficult because your body is used to having them and desiring those different things. And then going even a step further, if you're looking at having more of a whole foods diet, then that really teeters on reducing sugar. So reducing added sugar or just sugars that are naturally in your diet. We tend to see those also coming more so from carbohydrates like your fruits. So being cognizant of that. But these are things, if that's the realm that you are really interested in delving down, that sometimes it's nice to come in and be seen and then get teamed up with a nutritionist or a dietitian, and they can help assist you with those types of things and then allow for visits to have modifications and give you other tips and tricks on how to help stay or continue to develop that path. Which then would lead into certain things like meal planning and prepping, which are huge. And we really recommend doing those types of activity once you've kind of dialed in maybe what it is that you're interested in. So you would have your set amount of calories, and then you may even have your identified protein, fats, and carbohydrates, and maybe a certain style of diet that you are interested in. And then you do your meal planning and prepping, which is essentially there to help you stay and maintain on track, because we all know there's all sorts of temptations and different things out there. And it seems to get you on the days that you're not necessarily prepared. So thinking about that and kind of different things, you know, if you are considering a meal prepping, always thinking about how can you get protein in your diet. What would be a good protein source, typically encouraging for those leaner proteins, and then fish, try and get in a couple servings of fish every week. So kind of incorporating between a breakfast, lunch, and dinner, how can you hit 30 grams at least of protein each meal? And then working from there and obviously making adjustments. The biggest thing with the meal prepping that can become an issue is if you're trying to follow like a low histamine diet, that unfortunately the histamine, as you keep your foods in the refrigerator, the histamine levels go up. And so if that's something that you're trying to stay on top of or trying to limit for one reason or another, then that could be something you'd want to consider as well. How much food are you prepping ahead of time? Because the longer it sits in the refrigerator, the higher the histamine level actually becomes. And then thinking about that fiber as well, how can you best incorporate that into your diet? Most notably, I actually was listening to a podcast this morning while I was preparing, and there's some science out there that's backing that fiber is definitely important for gut health, but if you're looking at what is actually best, would be the recommendation is for fermented foods. Mm-hmm. If you're looking at, I don't know if you've heard that.
I have heard that. Yeah. Yes.
So that's so interesting, because then like if you are thinking about, say, a low histamine diet, we generally kind of discourage the use of fermented foods or minimize it because of different reasons. But the fermented foods tend to do better in supporting your immune health and your brain health as well. They've seen links and tied with that because it's improving your gut microbiome. So that's something to think about. And like when we're talking about fermented foods, that could be anything from sauerkraut, kefir, yogurt, kombucha, and I'm sure there's other options that I'm drawing a blank on.
Those are
on
some
right
of the
now.
Main ones though that I have heard.
Yeah, and you can pick that up like at your local grocery store, those different things. And the more diverse that your fermented foods can be, the better. Yeah. So I'm sure there'll be a lot more things now coming out about that after we've kind of nailed down the fiber. Mm-hmm. Now we're going to start talking about more fermented foods.
So I do have to ask you about the low histamine diet.
So a low histamine diet, just basically, especially for women, tend to see that they can have a high histamine level. So that just brings on more inflammation, essentially, in the body. And so you can trial a low histamine diet. I'll be honest, after I finished treatment and gave it a couple months and everything like that, I did work with a trainer, and we did a low histamine diet for 4 weeks. And I was pretty impressed with
how
the results.
How it reduced inflammation?
Because just from treatments, I was having terrible issues, like with joint pain mm-hmm. and everything else. I'd have flare-ups with allergies that were just random. You know, my whole body system was still trying to figure itself out. I ended up deciding to do a low histamine diet for 4 weeks. And, one of the nice benefits of it was a reduction in your overall weight, obviously, but that's because you're bringing down the inflammation. But I was significantly surprised by the amount of, I lost 1% of body fat in 4 weeks, which is pretty amazing. I mean, mm-hmm. that's a difficult thing to accomplish when you're eating 2,000 calories, whole foods, and you couldn't lift while you were discouraged from lifting because you were reducing all stress on your system. So it was just walking 30 minutes a day, no extensive strenuous activity, eating 2,000, a very detailed diet, but 2,000 calories a day and losing 1% body fat in 4 weeks. That was pretty cool, to be honest.
Yeah, so, I would say so.
Yeah. Probably the biggest thing was the long term. I had to travel out of town to get some of the items that I needed to eat on a regular basis that was on the diet. So that didn't live real well, like with my family, with mm-hmm. having two small kids and things like that.
Right.
And I was generally eating different things than they were. But I mean, Ryan, he'd at least eat the same thing that I was eating for dinner. So, you know, that made it easy. But we did a lot of white fish, like cod and salmon, fresh fennel, cabbage, red cabbage. So just lots of whole foods and chia seeds and apple cider vinegar and
oh, okay.
all those good things.
Well, I was going to go a little further and ask, because I thought, I'm sure people are curious now. Like, well, what does that diet consist of?
Yeah, so, and okay, it's interesting. Different too. I don't have like an affiliate with any supplement company or anything, but Thorne, they have a website that you can get on, and they have different diets available. One of them is a low histamine diet. That's not the one I did, but it is available on there, and they do have some recipes as well, which is nice because mm-hmm. sometimes it gets complicated when you read the menu and then you're like, how am I supposed to put this into something but maybe
to
palatable?
Actually eat.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So those options are there. And Thorne, even if you're not using their supplement, the ability to see the different diets that they have available is a good option and somewhere you could start as well if this was something you're interested in.
Yeah.
So
great resource. Yeah. Thank you.
So with that lifestyle modifications, if you've moved into the dietary changes and you have become, you know, comfortable and consistent, then you could definitely start moving into developing some type of a formal exercise program. And this could be anything consisting of cardio, resistance training, HIIT, yoga, Pilates. It's really just kind of nailing down what your goals are and then what you find enjoyable. And there's various ways of being able to do that. Science has proven again and again that the resistance training is really where the moneymaker is going to be at when you're talking about body recomposition, but also overall longevity, maintaining your muscle mass, bone density, all those great things. But I know, you know, even for myself, having somewhere where you're just kind of expending yourself and you are just doing one thing, you know, like a cardio workout or something, talking like jogging or swimming or, you know, some type of something that you're building also endurance at, but you can just kind of hit it and get it type situation mm-hmm. versus with weightlifting, you're always kind of changing and fluctuating and do, you know, moving weights. And mm-hmm. so just thinking about how to incorporate that into your life and then moving forward, you know, studies recently have been showing if you can really get in and do resistance training 2 to 3 times a week, that you will start to reap the benefit and see changes. They're even saying if you can get in and lift 1 day a week, it's absolutely better than nothing. You just won't see progress as quickly as possible. The 4 to 5 day, it really depends on what you're doing. If you are lifting weights 4 or 5 days a week, you need to be real methodical about what it is that you're doing, because you also need to allow for recovery to those muscles, those different muscle groups. So that might be something, if you're really thinking about getting in to that level of a program, that you would consider working with a trainer who could help develop something so that you're allowing for appropriate rest periods, so you're limiting your issues with injury and things like that. And then something else that we don't tend to think about a lot, but it's called, the acronym is NEAT, N-E-A-T, but this is the non-exercise activity thermogenesis. So it's such a fancy, yes.
Yes.
But this is where we're doing our fidgeting. So thinking about if you are somebody, I've always been somebody who like kicks my leg and moves maybe side to side. And when I'm standing, I do a lot of like shifting and yes. So that's a fidget. Mm-hmm. And this is part of that. And so that's part of your body's way of expending calories without even realizing it. Walking, you know, the more steps we can get in, you know, just by default that you're expending as well. Standing, so that's why those standing desks are so great, because if you're standing, you're using more than if you were sitting, and typically you're engaging your core and maybe some of your other large muscle groups while you're standing as well. And then thinking about even daily chores. So something that we might think is being mundane and sometimes, you know, taxing or just, you know, boring, could definitely be something that you can incorporate or consider as being part of the NEAT. And something like you could easily do while you're doing your chores, vacuuming or whatever, you know, you could throw on a weighted vest while you're running around your house. You could put little ankle or wrist weights on, or exercise bands, resistant bands around your thighs or whatever you choose, just to make it a little more challenging for you if that's what you need to make it feel a little more meaningful as well. You might feel you need a little extra judging as well, which could be something such as behavioral therapy. And there are options with this as well. These would be things like your cognitive behavioral therapy, as well as support groups or coaching. So, you know, we tend to think of like our exercise coach or hiring a trainer as kind of being somebody who can put together these plans or things like that for you. But really, it's that own form of therapy. It's somebody you're typically checking in with at least once a week, if not more, holding you accountable. They identify goals with you and help you work towards those. And then they typically tend to use a lot of like motivational interviewing. So how can we keep you interested and keep you moving forward and meeting your goals, even though we know there's the risk for setbacks? And how do we move forward from those setbacks? The cognitive behavioral therapy, you know, this is really great because it assists in changing your negative thoughts. And so that can be something as just as easy as maybe you've tried a program in the past and you didn't get as great of results, or you're just don't know where to start. And so you're kind of holding yourself back. Working with a therapist or, you know, a trainer can help change those negative thoughts and contribute in different habits that we might have that are contributing to maybe weight gain or more sedentary lifestyle or different things like that. And then if you really want to move into a realm or feel like you would benefit from things, and it's hard to get away from this because it seems to be everywhere, whether you're scrolling on Facebook or on watching TV, but these prescription medications, the GLP-1s, mm-hmm. the GIPs and the GLP-1s. So if we're talking about a GLP-1, we're talking about like the semaglutide or Wegovy, Rybelsus, Ozempic. If you're talking about a GIP GLP-1, so a GIP/GLP-1, this is a dual medication, that's your tirzepatide. That's going to be like the Mounjaro. And there's really only one. I mean, so that one works quite a bit different than the others. And then we also have things that you can actually get prescriptions for, such as phenermine, bupropion, and naltrexone, and then, of course, metformin. So I had done a conference with Mayo in fall of last year, and they did put together a really nice table that I do give out to some of my patients in the clinic who come and see me. But it just breaks down metformin, your Ozempic, and then the Zepbound. And so realistically, with the metformin, this is one that we really haven't heard a whole lot about, but it actually has some really great properties, and it's utilized a lot in longevity longevity practice. It's kind of thought of as a gold standard. And so it will provide a modest weight loss from anywhere from 2-5% if you utilize metformin, maybe some lifestyle modifications. And it's primarily going to just affect your insulin sensitivity. And it can cause a little GI discomfort, I'd like to say, like more so it's like bloating that patients might notice right out from the gate of using it, but we can adjust some medication and, try and make it more manageable. But Ozempic tends to be the hot one that mm-hmm. I feel like you hear a lot about. And that, like I said, is a GLP-1. And so with that, you're looking at a weight loss of about 10-15% of your total body weight, which is that's pretty drastic. Mm-hmm. That could be without necessarily any lifestyle modifications, but the risk of that is that you are losing this weight, but you're losing your muscle mass and not necessarily fat if you haven't incorporated other lifestyle modifications like a good workout plan and a nutritionist. And so then the risk is when you go off of that medication, you're going to get your appetite back and then you're going to gain weight. And so there are, Mayo specifically, unfortunately, has been addressing that there's probably a new diagnosis on the horizon, which is a sarcopenia, which is loss of muscle mass, but it would be in much younger women. Unfortunately, because they would have lost their muscle mass. And then when they gain the weight back, it's going to be primarily more so fat. And so the risks for hip fractures and also just inability to maybe function normally is definitely on the horizon and going to be a concern. So if this is something you're interested in, I strongly recommend that you are working with a provider who's able to make sure you have some lifestyle modifications in place while you're utilizing these medications to make sure you have the best benefit and the best outcome. And then the last one is going to be the Zepbound or tirzepatide, which is a dual medication. And that one, they're saying you can see anywhere from 15-22% of a weight loss with that one. This would be for the patients who tend to have issues more so with like food noise, which is where you just kind of ruminate, or, you know, if you're around food, then you kind of just have these obsessive thoughts about that until you maybe fulfill that desire. And so tirzepatide is good at quieting the food noise. But of course, the GLP-1s and the dual, there are risks. Primarily the biggest risk is not just the gaining the weight back and the muscle loss, but also there's a risk for thyroid cancer development. So definitely need to have a long conversation with your provider before venturing down those paths. Another one that would require medical supervision would be if you try and do what's called the very low calorie diet, which Mayo has studied extensively. That's where you're talking anywhere from like 700 to 1200 calories a day, because you need to be working with a dietitian, also a provider, and making sure that all your micro and macro nutrients are being met, and that you're only on it for a short period of time before, you know, you would need to come out of that cut, essentially.
Thank you, Jade. To our listeners out there, stay tuned and join us next week for part two of Lifestyle Modifications. That will do it for today's edition of Focus on Health, brought to you by Van Deest Medical Center, where our focus is you.